Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
You're listening to the Mental Health Today Show. My name is John Cordray. I'm a licensed therapist. I am the host of the show. And today I have with me a psychiatrist that he specializes in treating anxiety and depression from a holistic point of view, which is great. I always will like talking to other physicians and other therapists from that perspective, the holistic. And we're going to talk more about that. And if you struggle with anxiety and depression, or really, you know, this conversation will probably go to other mental health issues as well. Stay tuned. My guest today is Dr. Ryan. So we practiced this at the beginning. So I'm going to need your help. So I would say Soltan, but how would you say it?
I mean, that is a totally acceptable answer. but like if my Latin grandma was here, it would be Ryan Sultan. That's what she would say.
Sultan. Yes, Sultan. I like it. It's very good.
Accent on the A.
Yeah, that. Yeah, I need your accent for that. So that helps. Well, I want to welcome you to the show. And I'm really looking forward to getting to know you a little bit. But tell us a little bit of a story. What's something about you that would be, an interesting backstory?
Yeah, I mean, I actually have been in our world of like the mental health space a long time. My dad is a psychiatrist. My brother, sister, and I all had, and still do, struggled with ADHD as a kid. I had a lot of treatment when I was younger, and it made a big difference for me and my brother and my sister in our lives. And that's one of the things that drew me into the field, was the idea that even though, you know, particularly when I was going into it, the stigma around mental health was more significant within the field. I can remember being in medical school. I'm like, the things people would say, like I'd be in medical school, I'd be considering going into psychiatry. Like someone would know that, or they would say that, they'd be like, this is like another medical student. They'd be like, you know, if I went to medical school, I did all that work and I became a psychiatrist, I just feel like it would have been a waste. And I was like, okay, like, cause you know, historically, maybe not as much right now, but historically the medical field has been very, dismissive and snooty towards psychiatry. We have definitely been the like bastard stepchild. Hmm. And seen as like the least legitimate aspect of the medical field. And interesting for me, I think that's because our field is so the whole field of mental health is not as clearly grounded in science and mechanisms. Right. So like the heart, like I could just draw the heart and it's a pump and it's moving stuff around. Like it's really clear what it is. Like, you know, the kidney is like a filter system, basically. The liver is a combination of a filter system and like kind of a gland that produces stuff. You know, your lungs are basically something that has air going in and out of it. You know, your brain, you know, from a neurology point of view, people kind of can understand that. But the mind, like what's the mind? Like, I don't know. It's like this emergent property thing. And so, you know, psychiatry and mental health and our whole field is this dynamic, interdisciplinary world, sort of from my point of view, that pulls from like psychology, that pulls from like philosophy, certainly like neuroscience, sociology, I mean, even anthropology. And so for me, it was like, I remember thinking like, I was thinking ER, like emergency room medicine. And for me, I was like deciding what to do. You have to decide, you know, your fourth year. And I was like, every time I would think about something else, even though everyone thought it was sort of like lame that I was going to psychiatry, I was like, if I go into these other things, I won't be able to do I can't do psychotherapy. And I was so sad. And that's how I was like, nope, that's it. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing.
Nice. You know, I always think that's interesting. I talked to other psychiatrists as well, and they would say the same thing in med school, that is almost the feeling of psychiatry is at the bottom of the list.
It's not almost a feeling. Like that was the thing. That's changing, by the way. That's significantly changed. Psychiatry has become much more competitive for a variety of reasons. Much more competitive. I'm not that old. Maybe I transitioned like 14 years ago, but it's changed a lot. But yes, that's a common thing that, and I'm excited that it's more competitive because our field should be competitive.
Absolutely.
Because like our field is on the precipice of so much change, right? Like our understanding of the mind and how we help people is behind the rest of the ways that we help people from like an understanding and a science point of view and an effectiveness of treatment point of view. But we are making a lot of progress. And it's so exciting for me. That's very exciting. Like, you know, the ADHD boy in me that's still here that like loves the new thing, that gets excited. You know, I'm just so happy about that. Like, you know, when we talk about depression and anxiety, you know, we're doing so much. Like one of the main things that I'm always like, I mean, preaching is probably the appropriate word. How do you do a multi-pronged approach? You know, at our clinic, at our practice here at Integrative Psych, we think about always like you got to hit this thing from multiple levels. You know, how, like, yes, meds are great and they're super effective when used appropriately and targeted appropriately. Often we use medications inappropriately because we don't know what else to do, you know. So, but when they're being used for the thing that they actually work at, they're great. And, you know, we have psychotherapies and there are targeted psychotherapies that are useful for certain things. And if you use them, they're great. And then we have like environmental lifestyle interventions, and those are great too. But you know what actually the best way to help someone is to do all three of those things, mm-hmm. right? If you do all three of those things, people get better faster. They get more better than they would have had they only done one or two, and they stay better longer because there's a synergy that starts to happen, right? Like where one is sort of ticking off the other and you make a much more of a difference for someone. And that's one of my big, shticks, that I have around this.
Well, I think you bring up a really good point, and I love to kind of transition into this idea of holistic, approach. And, you know, that's been thrown around a lot, functional medicine, integrative approach. And I want to talk about that because I have had a lot of clients and a lot of my listeners who are struggling with whether it's anxiety, depression, bipolar, whatever type of mental health issue. And the last thing they want to do is use medication if at all possible. And they want to know what are some things that they can do to help feel better without going to or eventually weaning off medication. So can you tell us a little bit about what is exactly holistic medicine or a holistic practice when it comes to mental health?
Yeah, you know, for me, holistic is being holistic, right? I think sometimes the term is used to refer to the idea of non-Western treatments or the idea of like non-medical interventions. To me, it's actually that plus all the other things that we know, right? Like sure. it's and so like one of the things that I'm really excited about now is particularly in individuals that are, you know, in their mid-20s or late mid-30s is like, let's think about like hormones. We know hormones have a lot to do with mood and anxiety and attention. And you know, something that I've been very excited about is this root that's from Malaysia, Tongkat Ali. Sometimes it's called longhorn. And you can use this root, and there have been studies, like somehow someone got this funded, because, you know, it's very hard to, by the way, it's very hard to get studies funded for things that are not patentable drugs. Okay. Mm. Like, just that's just how the system is set up. Like, it's not a conspiracy. It's just like no one's going to make any money off it. And it's a lot of work right. to run a, and it's very expensive to run a study. Okay. And what we find is that, you know, people that are on this compound, that we see normalizations around a number of different hormones. So like cortisol goes down. That's like a stress hormone that you definitely chronically don't want to be too high. You get sort of a normalization around testosterone and estradiol, which are important hormones as well. And one of the things I see clinically, right, is people that have had like really bad depression or anxiety have like meaningful improvements. So we can see that on scales. And that's a thing that like Western mental health treatment like doesn't even think about at all. So that's something that I think a lot about. You know, another thing that I think a lot about that, you know, we should all be doing, myself included, and I fail at this all the time, is regular meditation, right? So mindfulness mm-hmm. is so powerful, right? Like so powerful. It's a huge commitment, but it's so powerful that there have been studies that show that if you do 45 minutes of meditation a day, which by the way is a lot of meditation, okay, that's a huge commitment. But in studies, again, that somehow got funded, that they are as effective as an SSRI, which is our most common medication that we would use for anxiety or depression, in reducing symptoms. Whoa, like that's huge. Mm-hmm. That is huge. And there are some more studies around exercise, right? And we know that like particularly cardiovascular exercise gets your dopamine up, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, and how do we find these ways to get our dopamine up? I mean, I hate to use the word naturally. It's like one of these words that's getting used, that uses like a lot to the point where you're like, I don't even know what that means anymore. But in a way that you're able to produce this internally and feel good about that. People often are anxious about like being dependent on something, and you know, okay, well, if you want to be dependent on something, like exercise sounds like a great thing to be dependent on. And they make meaningful changes, and it's not surprising because they overlap, right? So one of the treatments we have for depression is behavioral activation. Behavioral activation in its simplest form is get your ass up and do things, right? Like, you know what you shouldn't do when you're depressed? Lay around and do nothing. That will make you more depressed. Like, guaranteed, 100%. I'll bet on that over and over again. And I want to be very validating people that are very depressed, particularly if you are profoundly depressed and you meet the criteria for major depressive disorder. It's really hard to get yourself out there and do things. That said, doing it's going to make a difference. And exercise is a behavior activation. So not only is it bumping the dopamine probably because of the cardiovascular effects, but you're also getting out there and doing things. Oh, and if you do it outside, you're getting sunlight. Oh, guess what? Like sunlight is magical. Like, I mean, it does a lot. It resets your reticular activating system so that you are awake more at appropriate times. It appears to energize you. It has to do with mood regulation. Like you can look at large scale studies, and we know that when the days get shorter, everyone gets some depression. I mean, that's what seasonal affective disorder is describing. It's a phenomenon that is probably biologically built into us. That happens related to hibernation, and there's a whole area of evolutionary psychiatry that's like very interested in talking about this and thinking about it. So there's a lot of interventions you can be doing. I do want to say, and like, look, I mean, I'm a psychiatrist. Like, I'm supposed to be the drug dealer, right? That's what we were accused of. By the way, I entered psychiatry after psychiatry had already like withdrawn itself from that. So I'm safe, but like, you know, people older than me were involved in this more. The bottom line is though, that I really want to caution people, like, you know, you want to be careful about like not taking a medication or stopping a medication. You know, you want to add stuff on, you want to do it in a synergistic way. Please do that. I want you to do that. But that we do have effective classical Western treatments for stuff. That they shouldn't be dismissed. That if you want to try to get yourself to stop you taking those medications, that you can do that, but you want to do that in a really thoughtful way, because the consequences are enormous, right? Falling back into a depressive episode can ruin your life. Okay. Having worsening anxiety, again, ruins your life. If you can't manage your own anxiety and you are now spewing your anxiety everywhere, which that's one version of anxiety that people have, is they're like, they need to be contained by other people and they're overwhelmed. That affects your relationships. That's tiring for other people. You know, that's in many cases it's going to cause other people to sort of withdraw from you because there's a lot that you're asking. You may get stuck on things. Like a classic idea around generalized anxiety is like, you just keep thinking about it over and over and over and you don't actually do anything, right? And you are paralyzed by that. That is problematic, right? It is hard to do things in your life if that's how you're doing it. Not to mention, you're running this program in your brain all the time. Like 15-20% of your brain is being used to worry about this stuff. Your headspace is taking up on that, and it makes it hard to concentrate. I do a lot of ADHD treatment, and one of the first things we do when people come in for ADHD treatment is like, whoa, hold on. Like, can we just confirm that we think you even have ADHD? Like, because there are lots of things that can cause concentration problems. Lots of depression, by the way, like memory and concentration is literally in the criteria for a depressive episode. And getting back to the anxiety thing, like if you're anxious all the time, if you're thinking about this stuff all the time, it's really hard to concentrate on stuff. And people perceive that as a concentration problem, which it is, but then they incorrectly link that and say, oh, this means I have ADHD, which is a huge problem, by the way. Like, guys, like, please stop self-diagnosing. Like, I know our field is like a little like hand-wavy sometimes, but I swear we're thoughtful about this most of the time. Like, you know, be thoughtful about what your diagnosis is and really consulting with someone that can help you actually sort through that and tease that out. Because it's confusing. It's confusing to us. I still get confused about people's diagnoses sometimes when I'm working with them. Like, what do I really think is going on here?
Yeah, it's not necessarily a cut and dry all the time. And you bring up a really good point where a lot of people self-diagnose and they just Google it and they say, well, this is it. I have this. And it's not necessarily the case. And I also liked how you connected the holistic is not the absence of medication. It is the addition. If you need medication, you need it. But don't leave out all the other things that you can do to really can work together. And so this is not about anti-medication at all. It's about promoting good mental health, working on regulating your emotions. And maybe your diagnosis requires that medication, but also what else can you do to enhance it? And so I like that distinction that you made earlier. So that is really important. So don't self-diagnose. And what are some things that you can do right now at home to improve your mental health? Maybe it's getting exercise. Maybe it's eating a healthy diet. Or maybe it's getting enough sleep. That's one of the things that I have seen in my practice, that people are not getting enough sleep. And that can really interfere with mental health. So what would you say? So what do you say, doctor, about
you're touching sleep on something really important, which I think is a general description of like self-care. We live in a modern world that is
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Firing to make our mental health bad. You know, I was on a podcast yesterday, and one of the things we were talking about was like social media. Like, the social media algorithm is set up in a way to send you things that are going to make you feel crazy, right? And like also a narrow micro curated reality that you're seeing and all these sort of problems that we think about, right? Like, so, you know, you have to protect yourself from a system that is not going to naturally want to take care of you. So on, you know, whether that is monitoring your own screen time, monitoring your own social media time, valuing interpersonal relationships. We are social creatures. You need close interpersonal relationships. All of us do. I don't care if you're an introvert. That is a classification that was created recently, and it's a false like dichotomy. We all need that. We all need these social relationships. We are social creatures. We are primates. All of our relatives in this realm are like this as well. You know, so having contact with each other, which I think is one of the unfortunate, unintended consequences of like left over from the pandemic is that, you know, a lot of us don't spend as much time with other people in person as we probably should. That is restorative and healing for all mental health. Pick your diagnosis. I don't care if you have schizophrenia. It is healing for you. So how are we creating those close relationships? How are we fostering those relationships? That community, right? So that is a huge thing that people don't think enough about. And it doesn't really fall into any specific thing. It falls into maybe sociology or something like that. But that is something that I think we don't think enough about. Your sleep. I mean, like, where do we even start with sleep? I mean, you need to be in bed. You want to get 8 hours? You need to be in bed more than 8 hours. Okay. Like you need more than that. You need a routine before you go to bed to get yourself ready for sleep. Like think about what that routine is and describing that for yourself. Like, how do I get myself ready to go to bed in a way that I'm starting to, you know, calm myself down, settle myself in, you know, think about what that routine is and think about the routine in the morning too. How do I integrate something? So ideas to integrate would be like meditation. I love, there's like a zillion guided meditation apps now. I personally use Headspace, but there's many of them. You know, that's a great thing to be integrating into that. You know, what is my consistency of my diet? Not just the quality of the food, which is super important. God knows what processed food is. Like, I mean, like really sort of thinking about that from a quality point of view, but also like the consistency of your eating. I can't tell you how often people's self-care around food is just bad. Like they eat in this inconsistent manner. They eat large amounts of food, then they don't eat anything for a while. You know, how are you structuring your food in a way that, look, food is delicious. I love to eat. But food is also fuel. And so be making sure you're thinking about like that you are structuring your eating in a way that you are consistently getting that and you're not going up and down. Because the changes in your symptomology, your mood, your anxiety can be related to not eating properly or not eating enough or not eating at the right times. That's another thing that I think a lot about. You know, how do I get a regular exercise routine, which is so hard, guys, like so hard. Like I it took me years to figure out how to do this for myself. So doing all that stuff that helps you take this modern life that is not really taking care of you. And, you know, you're an adult now, so your parents are not doing this for you. And actually create a self-care that protects you. Because no one else is going to do it for you, right? No one is really going to do this for you. God knows your job is not going to do it for you. Your job, if anything, just wants you to work more. So, you know, like that's all they're going to want from you. And how do you create that for yourself and thinking about that?
Well, that's exactly right. And taking ownership of your life is so important, and making it a priority. You mentioned this or alluded to this earlier, that there are times that people can get so caught up in doing other things that they don't really pay attention to their own self. And developing those routines, bedtime routines, morning routines, eating healthy, drinking plenty of water, making sure you get enough sleep, all of that is so important. But yet so many people neglect it. They don't realize how it's connected to mental health.
Right? Like with the exception of maybe the community discussion, which that's an old thing people used to talk about. Like nothing we're saying is like groundbreaking right now. But I think the thing to point out is most of us, maybe not most of us, but a lot of us are failing at it, right? Mm-hmm. And you actually need to ask yourself, am I really doing that? Right? That's a foundational thing that you need to be doing for yourself. Even if you don't have like a diagnosed mental health condition, right? Like that is right. A thing that you need to be thinking about at a really, 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 really foundational level. Life is a DIY project. It's a do-it-yourself project. It's one of these things that's taken me a long time to realize. Like, you are in charge of your own life. Like, you know, no one is looking out for you more than you are. And you need to remind yourself of that.
That's right. And sometimes we're talking about anxiety and depression, and so often that robs you of motivation, that robs you of interest, that robs you of wanting to do anything. And so I was just talking to a client this morning about this very thing. And you mentioned it earlier about behavioral activation. And there are times where you have to do something in order, then maybe the motivation comes later. But so often we just sit around and wanting the motivation to just magically come up and then we'll get things done. But no, you have to look at it as a priority, whether you feel like it or not, and move forward, have something that you do, even if it's a little thing, but you accomplish it. And it's important to think about how you're going to cultivate and nourish your body, mind, body, and soul. And that is going to, it'll increase your joy levels, your interest, your motivation. And like you said, whether you have an official mental health diagnosis or not, if you're just feeling blah, yuck, right? And so you have this low mood, integrate these things into your life and you will feel better.
So let's talk about that motivation thing. That's a huge barrier for all of us, particularly the depressed people, right? So low energy, motivation, lack of it, rather. These are core symptoms of depression, and from an evolutionary point of view, low energy and reduced motivation for a brief period of time in a depressive, let's say, like, I don't want to call it an episode because that's what we mean. I don't know, maybe like an event, depressive event that you have, is actually thought to be helpful. The idea is that, like, you know, depression is this thing that, yes, some of us are more predisposed to it than others, that, you know, it's this, you're walking through life and you get kicked in the face and you get knocked down. And how do you handle that knockdown? And the idea of depression from an adaptive point of view would be that you withdraw, you maybe ruminate about it a little bit, you think about it, and then you re-engage, right? So how do we re-engage? As opposed to the clinical problem of depression where someone gets knocked down and they cannot get back up, right? That's and they just feel like they keep getting knocked down. And modern life makes it harder to re-engage, by the way. But the more you try, the more you do things that are hard for you, either not do things that you want to do that you know you shouldn't do, or do things that are challenging for you. And I'm not talking about like torturous, traumatic things. I'm talking about like things, you know, like getting out of bed and doing stuff that you don't want to do. What it actually does is it causes a hypertrophy, a growing, a part of your brain. I think it's the mid cingulate gyrus, which is this part of the brain that we can actually measure when you scan your brain, and it gets bigger. And the bigger it gets, the stronger your ability is to do things that are hard for you, that are difficult, that you don't want to do. And it's transferable, meaning like if you do it for one specific activity, that strength transfers to another activity. And think of it just like going to the gym. Like it is really hard at the beginning to start doing any kind of weightlifting. Good. That's good that it's hard. That means you got a lot of growth in front of you. There's a lot, and good. That means there's a lot you can do. That's exciting, right? And so it's the same thing. Like how are we going to like build this area up for you, which is actually going to be protective? It's not only just going to help you get out of the depressive episode, hopefully, but hopefully it's going to more like it's going to help you not get into another episode.
Yeah, the proactive approach as well. Not only that it will help you immediately right now, but it could help you prevent it at least getting worse in the future. And taking that as a priority, it goes right back to that. Are you taking your life, how you're feeling, just your old lifestyle, is that a priority for you? And hopefully you're listening to this and you say, well, maybe it hasn't been, but it's going to now be a priority. And if you are struggling with mental health, you have to take it a priority. You can't look at your life and say, my life is miserable, I can't do anything about it. And I think that's where the anxiety and depression try to convince you, is that you can't do anything about it.
And that is part of depression, is the idea that it changes your thinking, right? Like it changes your thinking in a way where Aaron Beck, the guy who designed CBT, used to talk about this idea of these glasses that you would wear. Maybe it was actually his daughter, Anna, that talked about it. But the glasses that you would wear that filter out certain things, and all you do is see the negative. It's this attitude, it's this mindset, and it's hard. It's sneaky. It's really freaking sneaky. And it changes your ability to think about it. So it's really like messed up in that way. So it is a battle that you have to wage. And I encourage people to try to actually separate their, particularly for depression, like think of their depression as like an entity that is coming after them that they are mad at, mm-hmm. and that they are not going to allow to do this to them, as a way to help them with that. Getting back to your idea of like doing something even small, that's a way to start. You know, you want to set yourself up to win. What is a small achievable goal? Whenever I do like goal setting with people always come with these like ridiculous grandy, whoa, no, like slow down. Like I'm going to get a new job. Hold on. What? Like literally you have no job right now and you're like running out of money and you're like out of unemployment. Let's start with something smaller. Like, okay, so what's the small thing we're going to do? Okay, we're going to imagine what our job might be, and we're going to take some notes on that. We're going to open up, you know, whatever, LinkedIn, and update our LinkedIn profile and write it out. And when you the first step might just be writing down what you need to do. You don't need to do it yet. Just write it down. Just log into your LinkedIn profile and then feel good about what you did. And each day, over weeks, over months, like pushing yourself further and further. If you set yourself up for unrealistic goals, again, I'm using my gym analogy again, you're going to get discouraged. Mm-hmm. Of course you're going to get discouraged because it was never realistic that you were going to achieve this in the first place. And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And then you convince yourself of that situation. With anxiety, you know, people say, well, I can't go talk to this person, I have social anxiety. Okay, do you know what the treatment for social anxiety is? It's exposure to social situations. That is actually the best treatment for social anxiety. And yes, it's going to be super stressful for you. Mm-hmm. Good. I'm glad it's stressful for you. Because you know what? It'll be fine. And you'll realize it'll be fine, and it'll be easier to do it a little bit the next time. You know, the example that I would give, like, if you have a fear of heights, ideally, you know what I want you to be able to do? I want you to jump out of a plane. I'm like ideally, if you can jump out of a plane, I mean, we might have cured. That's like flooding is what I'm describing. I mean, I'm being like a little facetious here. But, you know, I want you to be able to – yeah, I'm in New York City. I want you to get into New York City, go up to top of the Rock in the Empire State Building, and take the elevator all the way up and look over the edge. That's what I want you to be able to do. And so getting by this idea of holistic, like there are supplements that are super helpful. There are Eastern, like non-traditional medicine treatments. And there's also like a whole bunch of other stuff that we've been studying for a really long time. CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, which is a lot of what we're talking about today, that we know is actually super helpful, but it's hard. This is something that I spend a lot of time with when I start with someone, particularly someone who's not in a good place, is not to discourage them, but to set up the point of view that this is a challenging road, and there's lots of support along the way, but that you're going to have setbacks, and two steps forwards, one step back is still one step forward.
Right.
There is a net gain. And so when you get kicked in the face again, how do I remind myself that, look, hey, I was listening to that podcast. Those guys were talking about this and they told me that like I was going to maybe make some progress, but then I was going to fall backwards. And how do I not allow my mind, in this case, maybe the depression, to deceive me and to trick me into thinking that that's it. Screw it. I'm worthless. I got no value. Nobody likes me. I'm never going to do anything. It's never going to get better.
Yeah. And that's right. I mean, it's a mindset. It's being willing to get out of your comfort zone, being willing to do hard things. And I know you and I both know it's hard to do that when you're feeling as depressed and anxious as a lot of people are. Well, Dr. Ryan, our time is up, come to an end here, but I just really appreciate you coming on and just sharing your expertise and encouragement. This is hard stuff. This is hard work, and we both acknowledge that. And yet it is possible to feel better. And that's the silver lining in this. That's why you and I both got into the mental health field. It is possible to feel better. You can get through this.
Everyone can feel better.
Yeah. That's exciting. It really is. And I know some people are not there yet. But don't lose hope. There is light at the end of the tunnel. And there are things that you can do right now that we just talked about in this episode. Well, Dr. Ryan, again, thank you for coming on. I appreciate you. And it's been great to talk with you. And thanks for coming on and talking to my audience today.
My pleasure. Good luck, everyone.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Mental Health Today Show. I want to encourage you to continue to work on, just like we talked about today in this episode, keep working on your mental health. It's one step at a time. It's trying to remain as hopeful as you can. And realize that, yes, you're going through a dark time now, but it doesn't mean it's going to be dark forever. All right, friends, take care. Until next time, bye-bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.